Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and Happy New Year. It is the beginning of January. We have made it through the holidays, and to all of those parents who worked so hard to make Christmas just so special, just with the right gift and the right wrapping and the right time, and you just made all of the cookies and drove around to look at lights, and you made fancy hot chocolate with sprinkles or whatever you did to make Christmas special, even as my producer Stephanie is showing me the Little Debbie Christmas tree cakes. Yeah, we're fans of those here. All of those things that you did, you know, if you're kids didn't tell you, you did a great job. Just wow and good for you, and just kudos and high five for all of those moments that you spent trying to give your kids a good Christmas. Even if they don't tell you they're grateful, even if they're too young to tell you, I know that they appreciate it. And those are investments that we are making for another season. Remember that planting and harvesting don't happen in the same season. So if you did all of those things and you are sitting there feeling maybe a little unappreciated, or you're not sure if it was all worth it, I'm here to tell you it sure was. You did a great job. I know it. And now we're at the new year, and everyone's talking about New Year's resolutions. Now, I'd be interested to take a poll here. I wish I could see all of you listening right now, and I would ask you, are you doing a New Year's resolution or are you not? And if you're not, do you feel pressured? Do you feel guilty about that? Or if you are doing one, do you already have some anxiety about whether or not you're going to keep it? Well, I'm going to share with you that I got a little curious about New Year's resolutions, and I was wondering, where do they come from? And so I did a little digging for you, and I'll share that New Year's resolutions actually came from, according to our best knowledge, the ancient Babylonians. This surprised me. Maybe it surprises you too, but about 4,000 years ago. Now, they are the first to hold recorded celebrations to honor the new year. Now, for them, this actually was not in January, but this would have been in mid-March when they planted crops. So they had this massive 12-day religious festival known as Akitu. I think that's how you say it if you are a Babylonian expert. And you want to help me with that pronunciation, you go right ahead. But during this festival, the Babylonians crowned a new king, or they would reaffirm their loyalty to the reigning king, and they made promises to the gods to pay their debts and return anything that they had borrowed. Now, those promises are kind of looked at now as the forerunners of New Year's resolution. And what the Babylonians believed was that if they kept their word, their pagan gods would bestow favor on them for the coming year. And if they didn't, then they would fall out of the gods' favor. And that, of course, was a place no one wanted to be. Now, if you are starting to panic and think, oh my goodness, I didn't know New Year's resolutions were pagan, here is some hope for you. Don't panic just yet. For early Christians, the first day of the new year became a traditional occasion for thinking about mistakes we made in the past or wanting to do better or be better in the future. And we can really trace this actually to about 1740, where we have the English clergyman John Wesley, who was the founder of Methodism, and he created something called the Covenant Renewal Service. And this was most commonly held on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. And they called it the Watch Night Services, where they would have readings from scriptures, hymn singing, and basically offered this service as a spiritual alternative to the wild parties and other celebrations that were normally being held at that time to celebrate the coming of the new year. Now, I'm a history buff. I think those kinds of things are interesting and interesting to share with our kids. And when we're looking at today, it is a great time to think about what we've done in the past year, what went well, what needs to go better. And I'll tell you, when I sat down and looked at 2023, I was talking with my husband over the weekend about this, and We said that 2023 is going to go down as one of the hardest years we have ever faced as a family. We just had so much loss, so much grief, so much trial, and it was really, really hard. I lost both of my grandparents really unexpectedly. You know, I knew that they wouldn't live forever, but we didn't expect to lose them so close together. And as soon as we did, and just looking at all of those things, I can tell you that there were a lot of times that I fell down and I failed and I didn't do things as well as I would have liked to do. But I've learned to give myself grace and space for the journey. And I really do have a good feeling about 2024. And I hope that is the case. And wherever you are in your journey, whether 2023 was a great year for you, it was a banner year, it was just an okay year, or it was a really hard year, we all have the opportunity to do some reflection and think about, what do you want 2024 to look like? Now, when I was looking at some statistics and some research that came out about New Year's and New Year's resolution, Forbes did a poll and they said that 62% of people say they feel pressured to set a New Year's resolution. So that's a little over half of us who are thinking, okay, we should set some sort of resolution, like I should at least do something. And 20% of respondents say they will hold themselves accountable when it comes to sticking to their goals. Now, this was really interesting to me because last year at the same time when Forbes did this survey, 77% of people said they were going to hold themselves accountable, but only 20% were this year. And I think that just reflects that we're tired. We have faced a lot of challenges just collectively as a world, as a country, especially since COVID. And I think people are just tired. I know I feel this. Now, you won't be surprised to know that the number one New Year's resolution for this year, when Forbes polled people about what their resolution would be to be healthier or more fit. That was 48% of people. And that's usually what we say, right? This is the day where gym memberships go up and people buy protein supplements or exercise equipment, or maybe even just go on a walk and do something active. The second most common goal was to improve your finances. That was 38% of people. And right behind that was 36% was improve mental health. Now, the next two were lose weight, 34%, improve diet, 32%. So that means out of the top five, three of the five were about diet, weight, or nutrition. One was about money, and one was about mental health. Now, way farther down the list, 25% of people polled said they want to make more time for loved ones. And you know, that honestly made me really kind of sad to think that that's not at the top of our list or priority or what we think a New Year's resolution should be. Now, some of the even lower ones than that would be traveling more or meditating regularly. Those were 6 and 5%. 3% wanted to drink less alcohol, and 3% wanted to do a better job at work, which, let me tell you, I was not thinking about work yesterday. I was thinking, I am enjoying this break and I'm going to enjoy it till the very last moment. But if you find yourself, you know, setting those lofty goals and then you fall off the wagon just a couple of months later, a couple of weeks from now, or even a couple of days from now, you are not alone. I mean, almost all of us do that. Did you know that there is something called Ditch New Year's Resolution Day? They say that's on January 17th, while others call the second Friday in January Quitter's Day so that we can quit our New Year's resolution. And this Forbes survey that I have been telling you about found that the average resolution lasts 3.7 months. Only 8% of respondents stick to their goals for a month, 22 last 2 months, and 22 last 3 months, but only 9% stick with them for a year. Now, some things when you're thinking about if you're going to set a goal, which some of you have already checked out, right? You're thinking, I don't want to make a goal. You just told me that we're setting myself up to fail, so I just don't think that I'll have one. I'll rethink it a little bit. Hang with me there. Don't give up just yet. Action-oriented goals are more likely to result in success rather than avoidance-oriented goals. So if you're saying, I'm not going to eat this, I'm not going to go here, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to watch this, I'm not going to get on my phone, those goals are much more difficult to keep, those negatively framed goals, than positively framed goals. So if you say, I'm going to, that should be the first thing that you're thinking about with your goal. Are you going to do something? Don't set your goal up to say, I'm not going to do that. And the other thing that I would tell you about goals is that they need to be doable. Set yourself up for success. So not too long ago, I was having dinner with some of my faculty colleagues, and one of them said, my New Year's resolution is I am going to get on the treadmill every day. And I was really honest. And I said, that's a terrible goal. That's just a terrible goal. You are never going to make it every day. And then as soon as that first day comes that you don't get on the treadmill, you feel like a failure. So I said, you should do this. Get on the treadmill every day I can. I will get on the treadmill every day that I can. And just accept there are some days that I just can't do it for whatever reason. Maybe my schedule was too busy or whatever it was. So don't be too rigid in your goals. Think about something that is doable. And you have to expect obstacles and setbacks and failures. You are going to have days where you don't do what you said you were going to do. And that's okay. But the other thing we know from research about New Year's resolutions is that accountability increases your success rate. So whatever you're going to do, I encourage you to be bold enough to seek some accountability, to tell someone else, whether that's your spouse or your parent or your spiritual mentor, your Sunday school teacher or your grandmother or whoever it is that you want to hold you accountable. And that increases success rate. And sometimes I think we're really scared to tell people what our New Year's resolution is because deep down there's this voice inside of all of us that says, you know, you're never going to do that. But if we are bold and if we are brave, we will find accountability and they can walk along with us in that journey. And, you know, when you're doing those resolutions, the worst feeling is hopelessness, just feeling like this is hopeless. I set this goal and I just don't do it. And when you don't have hope, when you lose hope, you'll feel like quitting or not trying anymore. And so when I am looking at New Year's resolutions, I see that a lot of parents, they do want to be better parents. So maybe your New Year's resolution is something related to being a parent, whether it's spending more time with your kids or just something that you want to control your temper, you want to be not as angry, whatever that is related to your parenting journey. I want to invite you to a New Year's resolution that you can keep. I want to invite you to make your New Year's resolution this year for 2024 to be, and I feel like we need a drum roll here, but your New Year's resolution to be to invest in your parenting journey. That's all I'm asking. And I'm telling you, I'll be a guide on the side. I'll help you along the way. And one of the things that we're going to do together here in 2024 on the Dr. Nurse Mama Radio Show is we are going to explore 52 habits for healthy parenting. And every week, we'll talk about a new habit that we're going to try to adopt. Now, these are going to be easy and not extra things that you're adding on your plate, but things you'll be incorporating into your day and things that will make your day easier. So when we come back, I am going to tell you the first habit that we're going to look at, that first habit for healthy parenting and what I'll be doing with you and what I invite you to do with me. Now, right now, I am going to give away one of my books to the first caller at 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. This book is called Behind Closed Doors, a guide to help parents and teens navigate through life's toughest issues. And calling right now is your first investment in your parenting journey. We'll talk more about what that looks like on the other side of this break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends, and Happy New Year. If you joined us before the break, we were talking about New Year's resolution, and I have given you, my listeners, a challenge for a New Year's resolution. This is one that I am going to take. It is my one and only New Year's resolution for this year, and I invite you to take this journey with me. We've talked about some ways to set yourself up for success, and one of those ways is accountability. So I invite you to join me in my New Year's resolution and investing in your parenting journey, to intentionally invest in that journey. Now, I don't care if you're not a parent yet, or if you're a parent of little tiny babies, or if you're in that exhausting toddler stage, or if you have school-age kids, or if you have teenagers, or if you have adult children, it doesn't matter where you are along the parenting spectrum. This journey is for every parent at every stage. And I'm really excited to take this journey with you. We are going to be introducing 52 Habits for Healthy Parenting. And every week, we'll introduce you to a new habit that you can work on to integrate into your daily life. Nothing that can't be done. So as part of setting yourself up for success, I encourage you to seek accountability. If you say, yep, I want to jump in, I want to be part of that journey, tell somebody. Share this program with them, send them a text message, call them, and just say, I want you to hold me accountable. And better yet, invite them to join along with you and to join the journey. Because let me tell you something. On January 1st or 2nd, January 2nd, a year from now, 2025, you'll be sitting here and we'll be having the same conversation. But you could be a totally different person. If you intentionally invest in your parenting journey, if you jump in with both feet and go with us, you will be in a different place spiritually, physically, emotionally, relationally than you are now. And these things take time. So we're talking about taking this journey over a year. Now, I told you, and when we came back, that I would introduce you to the first habit we'll be talking about periodically throughout the week. And the first healthy habit of healthy parenting is prayer. That is it. Now, that sounds so simple, but let's talk about prayer and making that a habit for healthy parenting. What is it? What does that look like exactly? Now, people often turn to prayer in situations where they have negative feelings, when we are scared out of our minds, when we are grief-stricken, when we are angry, when we are troubled, when we're desperate. It's often easier to turn to prayer in those kinds of situations. So, for example, looking at research in March of 2020, 55% of U.S. adults said they had prayed for an end to the spread of coronavirus. And so there are people who don't classify themselves as religious or adhering to a certain faith, but they will say that they will pray in times of trouble. This is a response that is natural to us as humans. But it can be harder to pray when times are good or when we're not feeling those negative emotions. And so I wanted to share with you some of the things that research shows and what we know from science about prayer, because that's a lot of what I'm interested in, is our health emotionally, spiritually, physically, mentally. And I'll tell you that studying prayer as a researcher is really challenging, because there are questions like, what is prayer? You have to have a standard working operating definition of prayer to study it with scientific rigor. And then researchers have to rely on self-reports for prayer. So it's not something that you can objectively measure. It's just something that I can tell you I did or I didn't do. And that, will all participants mean the same thing by the word prayer? Or will some think just thoughts while others think, no, unless you're in a church on your knees, that's not prayer. And if scientists are studying prayer in a laboratory, how do you do that? And the truth is, not many scholars are interested in studying prayer for the long term because there isn't very much funding for it. And researchers who are at a university do need funding, and that can be a challenge. But we do have some studies and we do have some scientific evidence that show the outcomes of studying belief in God and self-reported prayer. And so we know from those research studies that prayer fosters feelings of connection. It makes us feel less isolated. It makes us feel less afraid. It makes us feel less anxious. Prayer also reduces our feelings of anger and aggression. It makes it easier to offer forgiveness. And prayer actually physically counteracts the fight or fright stage that we feel when we're having really severe anxiety. And it can move your body past that frozen stage where you don't know what to do. It improves our emotional regulation. Prayer actually accelerates recovery from trauma or surgery. So this is something I do with my patients. I'll always ask if they would like to have a prayer time or if it would be okay for me to pray with them, because I do believe that prayer accelerates recovery. And another really fascinating benefit of prayer is that it actually makes you live longer. Now, future studies, it would be so interesting. There are some researchers who are looking at physical reactions in real time, like praying, what does it do to your blood pressure or your pulse or your brain waves? And what does that do over time? Studying the same people who have the same prayer habits over time, what kind of impacts does that have? And those will be things that I'm following myself as a scientist. But, you know, the key for our lives is not trying to be the perfect parent. Let's bring this back to parenting, because we need prayer as a valuable tool. We cannot do everything. We are not experts at everything. We all have limitations, and we have to turn to the expert parent who is God, our Father. And we have to cover every detail of our child's life in prayer. Now, prayer is acknowledging and experiencing the presence of God, inviting God's presence into our lives and our circumstances. It is seeking the presence of God, getting the power of God, which means that we can overcome any problems that may come our way. Now, that may not look like what we think it should look like, but we know that God will be with us in those times. And when we pray, we really are humbling ourselves before God and saying, I need you. I cannot do this without God. And when we don't turn to God in prayer, it's like saying, oh, well, we can do it all ourselves. And self-help books are really popular, but I will tell you that I don't need any help for myself. I have helped myself into plenty of poor decisions, plenty of emotional outbursts, plenty of, you know, things that I wish I hadn't done. And self-help can be important. It can be important to work on ourselves, but without doing it with the power of prayer, it's like, you know, trying to use a blender in the kitchen without plugging it in. We have to have that power source. And we really need to know that praying gives us authority over the enemy that is there to steal and kill and destroy, and that is after the hearts of our kids. And so I think we really underestimate how powerful prayer is. And when people say that, you think, oh, no, I want something more snazzy, more flashy, more, you know, just seeming to be a life hack. But really, this is the greatest life hack that we could ever have. Do not estimate the power of a praying parent. Now, in Revelation chapter 5, verse 8, the Bible says, it's talking about, you know, all of these living creatures and elders who are before the throne of God. And it says that each one, they were talking about each one, the four living creatures and the 24 elders in this really dramatic scene in Revelation. It says each one had a harp and they were holding golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of God's people. Now, I want you to take a minute and I want you to visualize that when you pray, in your mind, when you pray out loud, every prayer that you utter is swirling in that bowl before the throne of God as incense before Him. That is a power that we have. That is a power that God has given us to help our children. So I think it's really important not to underestimate that. So let's talk some practicalities, like how and when to pray. What does this look like? I'm going to give you a bunch of ideas now, but don't feel pressured that you have to do all of them, or you have to do one of them all the time, or you have to do them perfectly. Pick what works for your life, for your family, for your speed. Just think about what are ways that you can incorporate prayer into your daily life. Now, the first thing that you can do is actually to create a prayer space in your home. Is there a physical space in your home that you associate with prayer? Is it a specific chair, your car, someplace in your bed? Is it a chair out in the backyard? Is it a couch? Is it a bulletin board that you have in your pantry with prayer requests on it? Where do your kids see you praying? Now, I'll tell you, my father-in-law is actually really good about this and really good about having intentional prayer time. And my kids know that they will see him at his desk with his Bible praying out loud, or they will see him knelt beside his bed praying over his Bible. And so where is that space in your home so that when you think, okay, I need to pray, can you go to that space? Maybe it's in bed before you go to sleep and before you get up. But just what is a space that you could say, you know what, that's going to be my prayer space. I don't always have to pray there, but it can be a place that I go to, because that physical act is going to trigger your brain to respond. You can also think about praying as we think about praying as in what I just described to you with my father-in-law, that you have to kneel by your bed or you have to fold your hands over a meal. But really, we need to shift our perspective to see prayer as an open conversation with God that starts immediately when our eyes open in the morning and that doesn't end until our eyes close at night. Now, sometimes during the day, and this may just be a sentence or two. It may be just, God help me right now, that I need help right now. Or it may be just, you know, a longer time. I know when I used to commute and teaching at a university that was about a 45-minute drive, I would use that time as my prayer time. So just think of it as an ongoing conversation. And so if you pray, just sometimes think about it as you're talking to your family member, if you're talking to your mom or something like that. Sometimes you may talk a couple of times short during the day, or sometimes you may have a long, really good conversation. All of those things are normal. It doesn't have to look exactly the same every day. Now, the next thing that you have to do in your prayer time that I think is the biggest hindrance for us is limiting your phone distractions. And I think so much time is eaten up by our phones and we think, oh, I don't have 5 minutes to pray. I don't have 5 minutes to read my Bible, but we have 2 hours to watch cat videos. I mean, that's just the truth. Let's just be honest about it. So if you're going to pray, look at your time that you're spending on your phone. And when you find yourself mindlessly scrolling on social media, stop and assess your prayer time for that day. Have you had some prayer time? Do you need to put your phone physically away somewhere so that you can't grab it while you're trying to pray? And other things that you can do are praying with and for your children often in the moment. Think about Nike, just do it. Just pray. There's so many times that we say, oh, we will pray, or we'll say, oh, you know, my teacher is sick, or my friend is sad, or, you know, the neighbor had surgery, and we say, oh yeah, we'll pray for them. And then we never do. So it may feel awkward at first, but just do it in the moment. Just start praying right then and there, praying that for that person. Now, I want to give you an example of this from my own family's life. So now, over the Christmas break, my husband and I decided to go out to eat for a special treat with our whole family. So there were 10 of us who were going out to eat with my husband's family, his extended family, and ours. And we walked into this restaurant, and as we were waiting for a table, a dad walked in, and he had his teenage daughter and 2 younger kids with him. And he looked at us, and he started laughing, and he said basically that he only had 1 more year of child support, and then he wouldn't have to be paying for this kid anymore because she was going to be 18. And I'll say that he said it in the ugliest way that you can imagine, right in front of her. And it was just heartbreaking to see. And things kind of went downhill from there. He was very belligerent and had an argument about whether he was going to pay or not, and ended up telling this daughter to go out to the car. And there was conflict between the manager, and we're all watching all of this unfold. And it was just heartbreaking to see this girl who was on her birthday, was what we were told. And she was sitting there just heartbroken. And, you know, we could think like that was a sad situation and have compassion for her. But I just asked my kids, I just said, would somebody just pray for that girl? And one of my children prayed, and it really just a beautiful, heartfelt prayer. And I thought that made us feel like we couldn't intervene in the situation in the way that we wanted to. But we knew that God knew that situation so much more than what we had just seen happen before our very eyes. And I think that's so important for us to model for our kids, to just pray right then in the moment. I do this when my kids from college will text me and say, will you pray for this test? I don't say, yes, I surely will. I respond immediately back with a voiced memo saying, here is my prayer for you. And I will just pray right then and there, whether that's on a text message or a voice message. And you know, they don't always say, oh, thank you so much for that. But seeing that little heart like that message is just everything. When we come back, I'm going to give you a lot more strategies, a lot more ideas for prayer as a habit for healthy parenting. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back. Happy New Year. I'm so glad to see you all. We are talking about New Year's resolution, and I've issued a challenge to you to take the New Year's resolution that I am taking this year, and that is to intentionally invest in your parenting journey. Now, this is something that really you can't fail. I'm not asking you for a specific number of hours or a specific milestone or, you know, just other very specific things to do. So you can't fail. Just say yes. All you need to do is just listen in. Every week on the Dr. Nurse Mama Radio Show, we'll be covering 52 habits for healthy parenting. And these are things that are very simple and can be yet not so easy to do, but we will do them together. Now, we were talking about the first habit that we are focusing on this week is prayer. And I will tell you that I cannot do anything without prayer. I believe so firmly in the power of prayer. And I think about one time when I was in a position to actually be the choir director for our church's Christmas musical. Now, folks, I'm a nurse practitioner. Like I've led in the worship ministry for a really long time, but I am not a trained choir director. But I knew that with the power of prayer, we could do it. And so every single rehearsal, we would pray over every seat for every person who was coming. And wouldn't you know, we had a packed house that night, and it was a really special time of worship. And I can think of so many other times in my parenting journey where I have prayed. And I will congratulate at this point Cesar from Iowa, who won a copy of my book. Now, if you've read my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues, you'll know that the opening scene of my book is me at a desperate moment in prayer and parenting, where I felt like a fraud and a failure. And I was having conflict with my daughter, who was 13, driving down the road, and she threw a book at my head while I was driving. And what did I do in that moment? I prayed loudly, tearfully, very inartfully. I'll tell you, it was not a pretty prayer, but it was a desperation, a desperate plea for God's help. And I do believe that prayer changes things. So we have been talking about What does that look like practically? I'm all about the practical application. That is the nurse in me that wants to tell you, okay, this is exactly how this works, the nuts and bolts. And so before the break, we talked about some of those ways that you could do that. And I'm going to give you some more ways practically that you can pray with and for your children. You can pray at a routine time, just praying before bed. Now, again, this doesn't have to be a big theater production. This can be just something very simple, even a reminder, a prompt to your kids to say their prayers, or to pray first thing when you wake up, or to pray before a meal together. That, I'll tell you, there's something very heartwarming to me when my family and I are out to eat and we'll look across in a restaurant and we see another family who has their head bowed and are stopping to give thanks before their meal. And it's just a good discipline to have to remind ourselves that we need to take time for prayer, even say something as simple as giving thanks for our meals. You can have a photo album. Now, if you have younger kids, this is a great way to pray. You can just get a very inexpensive dollar store photo album where you can put pictures of your relatives, of your family, of your friends in that book, and you can make it a prayer book. And as they're looking through that picture book, you're teaching them to say prayers for that person. And these can be really little sentence prayers that Lord, I thank you for this person. I thank you for that person. I thank you for this person, or please be with this person, and just teach them little simple prayers when they're younger. When they're younger, you can lead them through sentence prayers like, Lord, I thank you for, and then have them fill in the blank. Lord, forgive me for, you can say that as their parent, and have them fill in the blank. Lord, help my friend, fill in the blank. Lord, help me be more, fill in the blank. Lord, help me to let go of, fill in the blank. You get the idea. Lord, give me the courage to, fill in the blank. And so those kinds of things can be just easy ways to incorporate prayer. You can also have sentence prayers around the table where just each one in your family just says a sentence prayer, just one sentence. Another thing that we do in my family is highs and lows. So we do this at the dinner table. We say, now my kids are teenagers and now young adults, and we still say, tell me about the highs and the lows and where did you go? Tell me about your day. And knowing what those highs and lows are, even if it's something as simple as, it could be something as simple as a grade that they were disappointed over, or something more complicated, or just knowing what they're celebrating, those things can be easy to transition into prayers. You can also have a prayer wall in your house where your kids can put prayer requests on. That could be a marker board. It could be a bulletin board with note cards, just something really simple. This could be digital where you have a running prayer list, maybe a text message string that's just for prayer. That can be a way to incorporate prayer into your day. You can also pray for emergencies. So when you hear ambulance sirens, just make it a habit to stop and pray for that person. Or pray for the person if you hear something on the news and you're discussing something, especially I have this with teenagers, we'll talk about events of the day, just make it a habit just to stop and incorporate prayer into your conversation. A simple way to pray, a lot of you I'm sure have heard of this, is called ACTS, that's A-C-T-S, that's praying with adoration, confession, thanksgiving, and supplication, which is just praying for others. So this could be an acronym that you just write down on a little note card in your Bible, or you just put into your phone, and it can start as just simple sentence prayers. This does not have to be a 30 minutes on your knees lighting a candle. It can just be simple prayers. God, you are faithful to me. I confess my impatience to you. I thank you for giving me strength to get through the day, and I pray that you would be with my children and watch over them as I'm struggling. It can be something just as simple as that, but those are ways that you can incorporate prayer. Our kids need to see us as their parents being their advocate before the throne of God. There is something really powerful when your child is afraid at night. I know my kids are afraid, and so I will pray. God, I pray that you would send an army of angels to surround my child's bed tonight. I pray they would keep watch over the night. I pray that they would give a bright light and that they would make any enemy who would come to my child's bed tremble in fear. And hearing them say that and hearing having our kids hearing us pray with that kind of confidence, knowing we have access to that kind of power, is extremely powerful. You can also pray scriptures, or you can use prayers from the Bible. Now, I've done this in Behind Closed Doors in my book. At the end of each chapter, I have given a prayer that is specifically for your child, and it's just specifically from the Bible. And so I'm going to give you an example of what that looks like. I have prayers from the Psalms. So this one is from Psalm 139. This is when I was praying for my children for their self-image and the words that they say, and when we were talking about the challenge of social media. So I took this prayer from Psalm 139. God, I thank you for this fearfully and wonderfully made child who bears your image. Your eyes saw and knew them in my womb, intricately woven. You have every day of their life in your hand. You know when they sit down and when they rise. You know their thoughts from afar, even when I don't. You search their path. You are familiar with all their ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, you know what it will be. You hem me in as a parent, going behind and before me, leading me, your hand holding mine. How precious are your thoughts, O God, search my heart. If my words or actions grieve my child, lead me on the wings of the morning. Help me reflect in their eyes the image that you created them to be. Now that you may think, oh my goodness, that is a beautiful prayer. Well, those are not my words. Those are the words from Psalm 139. And all I did was just interject my child's name and personalize that scripture for me. There are other prayers that you can pray. We have Moses who gave a prayer, and Nehemiah who gave a prayer, and David who gave a prayer, and Solomon, and Jesus, of course, showed us how to pray in the Lord's Prayer. And I think of the prayer from Mary that came across as a song. She writes in Luke chapter 1, or her words are written in Luke chapter 1, starting in verse 46. My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. And you can think about those words and how they apply to you and just read them out loud. The other thing that you can do that I will be doing along with you is keeping a prayer journal. So this doesn't have to be anything fancy. I actually bought a spiral notebook. Stephanie, my radio producer, has one too. We're going to be doing this together. And I am just going to try as often as I can to update my prayer journal and to write what I'm praying for, what I'm praying about, what I'm believing God for. Now, again, this is something that will be very hard to fail at, because all you have to do is just write in it as often as you can. Some of you may have a book every single day. Some of you may write one or two things every couple of weeks. That's great. It's all about progress, not perfection. Parenting, I'm going to say it again, parenting is about progress, not perfection. And it is so encouraging. I'll be prompting you at different points throughout the year to go back and to look and see, what are you praying for? And it is absolutely amazing to see those results. And I'll give you an example from my own life. When my oldest daughter was in high school, she really was praying for a mission opportunity. She felt called to do something big, something bold, but she didn't know what it was. And so we just started praying about it. Well, in the fall of 2019, I got an opportunity to go to Baylor University. And the first day that I was there, I spoke at convocation. And a faculty member called me. I didn't know her at all. And she said, I was in my prayer time today and God has told me to invite you to go to India with me. And I thought, oh, I'm sure that you just said Ireland, right? Or Italy, not India. That wasn't on my radar at all. But I prayed about it and felt the Lord opening that for me to go. Well, that was in the fall of 2019. It was supposed to be in 2020. So it kept getting canceled. It kept getting pushed back. And then it went to the time when I was so frustrated by this. I thought, I can't believe that I'm not going. And my daughter is watching this journey thinking, I really thought that this was for me, but how is this for my mom getting this opportunity? Well, my daughter ended up going to the same university, was a student there. It was very easy for her to apply to this mission group, being in the same opportunity. And we ended up going to India together. And that was an absolutely amazing experience, way far above what we ever could have asked or imagined for our journey together. And she is actually going to be joining me on the show tomorrow, and we can talk about that experience and the impact of prayer there. But prayer works. And again, I wasn't praying something big like that. I wasn't praying to go to India, but God intervened. The other things that we can pray for. And when in December, I had my sister, who's also a nurse practitioner, Amber, on. We had a long conversation about praying for our kids. And we talked about praying for protection. And she gave us a verse from Psalm 91 that says, He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. That's from Psalm 91:4. Now, I tell my kids that's Psalm 91:1. That's calling 911. If you're ever in need of a prayer, 911, go and just start in Psalm 91. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust, for He will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His pinions, and under His wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and buckler. You will not fear the terror of the night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in darkness, nor the destruction that wastes at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right side, but it will not come near you. And it goes on from there. I'm telling you, you can find amazing prayers in God's Word. So that is it. The New Year's resolution that you can keep, and the first of what will be 52 habits for healthy parenting. This week, we'll be talking more about prayer. Get your prayer journal, get your accountability partner. I'd love to hear from you, and we will see you on the show tomorrow with my special guest, my daughter, who is going to talk more about the role of prayer in her life, and we'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.